Hold on, before we get to Ray, I forgot you guys sent me a photo of you two at the Penguin game last night. Were you seated together?
No, we were a couple of sections over, but he was only a couple rows behind the ice.
Oh, my gosh.
I was about halfway up.
Joe.
He tells me that when Crosby scored the winning goal, he pointed at you, Limits?
He pointed at Limits and said, this is why I lift all them weights.
He might have. Joe, I was in the second row.
Really?
I have never sat this close for a Penguin game before. My friend Addy set us up. Like, if there were four of us there, it was incredible.
Yeah.
Because I literally had a direct line of sight. Crosby was probably 15 feet from me scoring that goal. It was I'm still speechless thinking about it. It was so cool to see Sid's greatness that up close and personal for a game-winning goal.
Totally different sport when you sit that close to the ice.
Absolutely.
It changes more than any other sport compared to watching it up high or especially on TV. It's just totally different.
I do agree with that. I've never been in the crowd for an NBA game, but I'd have to agree that hockey is top of that list.
You should have jumped on the ice, Limits, and celebrated with Crosby and the Penguins.
You know, it would have been pretty difficult, but I would have tried. I should have tried.
Ray Fittipaldo is on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Ray, I trust that you're well, and I want to get to the hot question here with the November 5th trade deadline right around the corner. Are the Steelers going to go out and get a receiver, and if so, who?
Well, Joe, I think they're going to look at it hard. You know, I think when you look at this receiving core, it's been playing much better lately. You know, I think Russell Wilson has done a good job of getting Van Jefferson more involved, Calvin Austin more involved, but I think the overall depth is lacking, so I could definitely see them adding a piece. I think Mike Williams is probably the most likely when you look at it. You know, I know they won last night, and I know Aaron Rodgers thinks they could still make a run. I suppose so. They're 3-6, but I think a guy like Mike Williams would come cheap. You know, after that, you'd be looking at guys like Jacoby Myers and maybe Darius Slayton, but apparently Darius Slayton's asking price from the Giants is really high. So if I had to pick one guy right now, and this is solely for depth purposes, I would go with Mike Williams.
Ray, the big talk has been about trading for a wide receiver. Is there any other position, though, that the Steelers could look to improve that may surprise people?
You know, I don't think so, Donnie. I look at the D-line. I know they're a little banged up right now. Montrevious Adams is not going to play. I think you really saw, I don't want to say they were exposed, but they were quite leaky against that Giants offense. So, you know, maybe defensive line, but I don't know if there's anyone out there that's really on their radar. I think more than likely they're going to go with Isaiah Loudermilk and Dean Lowry and some of those other guys they picked up in the offseason. But if there was one other problem area on that team, if you want to look at the most recent game, I would say D-line, but I think they're going to take care of that in-house rather than go outside and look for one.
Donnie, can you believe how unprofessional it was for Limits to let his phone ring
in the middle
of an interview? Ray, I apologize.
Yeah, totally me, Ray. Totally me. I'm sure Ron would get a kick out of that one.
Have you talked to Ron lately,
Ray? Sorry, Joe. I apologize.
No. I have not talked to Ron. I want to say I texted with him about a week ago, and everything was back to normal after the hurricane.
Yeah, so. I think he was doing well. He misses Donnie desperately. I know that much. So looking at the second half, right, here's how I figure it, I should say. And I was talking to Hokie about this yesterday. I think they're going to win one out of every two games all the way till the end, and then they get to Cincy with 10 wins. I don't think that's a bad second half either. Because if you break it into two game segments, almost every game is difficult, even the Cleveland games, because it's the division, because they have a new energy about them. I think if I were a Steeler fan, I would love to see them split and be 10-6 going into the final game of the year. I think that's reasonable, and I think that's actually going to happen. You?
Yeah, Joe. I mean, that would be quite interesting because, you know, the division title would be on the line. I know they're not playing the Ravens. They're playing the Bengals, but the Bengals could be still in the hunt for a playoff spot. So that would certainly make for some good television on the final week. I know that's what they try to do here with those final games of the season. You know, game 17, it's always against a division foe, and this one could be big for the Steelers. I don't know about you. I think if they do get to 11 wins, I think they got a real shot at least tying for the division and maybe getting the top seed from the AFC North. I think the Ravens' defense, their problems are not going to go away. I still think they're going to win 10 or 11 games, but listen, if you're the Steelers and you get to 11, I think you got a great shot of being right there with the Ravens, maybe even winning a tiebreaker. Hey, who knows? Maybe getting the second or the third seed in the AFC.
Ray, halfway through the season, this is Mike Tomlin's best coaching job since when?
I would probably go back before 2020. 2016, I thought was a good season for him. When you go back and you look at the midseason injury that happened to Cam Hayward, he was probably their best defensive player on that team. He misses the final 9 games of the season, and they still go to the playoffs, and they make a run to the championship game. I also think 2017, if you look at that team, guys, they won 13 games, should have beaten the Patriots, should have been the one seed. And, if you look at it, the talent on that team, it was a really good offensive team, but it wasn't a great defensive team. And, they managed to be the 2 seed that year. So I would probably go with 16, but, I thought 17 was a really good year for him as well.
Ray Fittipaldo in the Post-Gazette on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline. Ray, brought to you by LGKG Injury Lawyers, 7 locations in the Pittsburgh region. They'll take your personal injury case personally, lgkg.com. The text line, so you can contact our friend Limits, brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates Personal Injury Law Firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. I've asked a couple people this, Ray, but I don't think I have with you. Percent chance that Najee remains in Pittsburgh, that he signs this offseason and stays here?
I think it's still relatively low. I think the guy's having a great season, but when you decline the option in May, I think, usually 8-9 times out of 10, you're not going to go and do business with that guy after the season ends. So, I'll say 15-20%, maybe if Najee really wants to stay here and he doesn't have a lot of interest on the open market, maybe they could do something like in the $5 or $6 million range. But I mean, listen, the way he's playing, guys, if you look at some of the running back contracts from this past March, and you look at the way Najee's playing now, I think there's going to be money to be had out there for him. So I wouldn't expect him to come back. I think for those two reasons, I think it's a relatively low percentage at this point, but I acknowledge Najee Harris is playing terrific for that offense.
Ray, it seemed like there was concern by people when the change was made to go to Russell Wilson, thinking that that would hurt the Steelers' run game. But Najee Harris, he has just kept it going. Now, he was really good in that final Justin Fields start in Las Vegas a few weeks ago, but back-to-back-to-back games now, he has been terrific. Is he fitting into this Arthur Smith offense a whole lot better than even the Steelers expected?
I think that was a legitimate concern going into the season because Arthur Smith, had a lot of success with Derrick Henry. Obviously, Najee is not Derrick Henry. He's not that type of player. But, Arthur had different types of backs in Atlanta, too, mostly recently Bijan Robinson. So I think everyone was kind of sitting back and waiting to find out exactly how he's going to use both those guys. And, listen, it hasn't really been a lot different from what the Steelers did under Matt Canada and then Mike Sullivan late last season. They're pretty much splitting the snaps when Jaylen Warren is healthy. So, this thing with Najee, I think he's having his best season of his career. He is fitting into this offense, but I still don't know if that means that he's going to be on the Steelers in 2025 or even if the Steelers want him on their team in 2025.
How much has the presence of Russell Wilson, both in the way he plays the game and his leadership capacities, how much has that helped George Pickens?
I think tremendously. I think Russell said after the game, he would talk to George, during the week and kind of, get in his head before the game got there that, he was going to try to get him involved and he has to be patient. And I just think with Russ's accomplished resume, I think George probably knows in the back of his head that things are going to be better each and every week. He's going to get maybe not more targets, but he's going to get more opportunities to make big plays within this offense. And I think you've seen that come to fruition in these first two starts, you know, for Russell Wilson. So, you know, just going back to your previous question, yeah, the Steelers lost a little bit in their running game with the decision to go with Wilson over Fields, but don't take away from what Wilson has done to open up the running game, because teams can't tee off on it in the first half. I think you remember all those games early in the season, guys. Teams were run blitzing. You know, teams were in the gaps all the time. You didn't really see that against the Giants. And, you know, Najee Harris was out there getting the majority of his yards in the first half. So I think teams are just backing off now. They're paying much more respect to Russell Wilson, and that, you know, that's been key for this running game as well the last 2 weeks.
Ray, the doubters have been out there, and they've been abundantly clear in some cases. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger being one of them, telling people to pump the brakes on this whole thing, and especially Russell Wilson and the offense. What do you have to see from this team as a whole to say, you know what, this team is good? Like, I'm tired of hearing people say, well, they only played this team, and they played Kirk Cousins coming off his injury, and they played Bo Nix in his second game, and they played the two bad New York teams. It's just excuse after excuse after excuse. Nobody wants to admit that they're actually, actually may be a good team, Ray.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Donnie, I don't know what you guys think, but I think the team just looks a lot different and for the better with Russell Wilson at quarterback. Listen, I know they're not going to get 400 yards of offense every single week. I understand the competition is about to stiffen here in the second half of the season. And listen, maybe if you go 4-5 or 5-4, you know, maybe that's not maybe it's not all that bad. Maybe you're just playing well at the end of the season, and that's what it takes, you know, to make a run in the playoffs. So, you know, there's a couple things that are concerning at this point. The red zone offense under Russ hasn't been great. They got to get that rectified. They're still a very highly penalized team. They tend to shoot themselves in the foot. So that's an issue. But, you know, for me, the first two games under Wilson have been really encouraging. And I think as long as they continue to progress, and forget about the win-loss total in the second half, as long as they're 10-7, they're going to get in. I just want to see this team hit their stride late in the season. And I think, you know, if they do that, I think they'll have a puncher's chance once the postseason gets here.
Donnie, may I engage Ray in a game of free association?
You may.
You ready, Ray?
I am ready, Joe.
All right, I want to get you on the record here. Najee Harris returns to Pittsburgh next season.
No.
Justin Fields returns to Pittsburgh next season.
No.
Russell Wilson signs a juicy new deal this offseason.
Yes.
The average salary for that deal, if it's over under $40.5 million a season, what is it, over and under?
Oh, it's under 40, yeah.
Over under 30?
Right in that ballpark, yeah.
Broderick Jones will be the left tackle next season.
Yes.
Therefore, you feel like Dan Moore will be gone.
Yep, he's going to command a lot of money. Good left tackle on the open market. That guy's going to get paid.
Is he a good left tackle?
I think this year he is. I think it's going to be interesting to see how teams weigh the four-year sample size. But, I mean, for a guy who's on the upswing, I don't think it's going to matter. I think they're going to pay him for what he is now, not what he was in 21, 22, and 23.
Is there any chance at all that you'll see Fatanu go to guard, then retain Dan Moore and keep Broderick Jones at right tackle?
Yeah, small chance.
Donnie, do you agree with that?
I do.
Small chance or big chance?
I'll say small.
Small. Okay. Do you agree with PFF that Larry Ogunjobi's having a bad year?
Yes.
Give me a grade on Keanu Benton so far.
Oh, Keanu hasn't been good the last couple of weeks. I'll go C, but I got a feeling he's injured though too, a little bit banged up. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
How would you categorize Patrick Queen? Just what you thought? Disappointment or exceeded expectations?
I'm a little bit disappointed, but I know the reasons. He's still getting used to the defense. I do think in the second half you'll see a better player. But if you ask the coaches in that building, they're very satisfied with what they're getting out of Patrick Queen.
Who's going to be the majority slot corner by the end of the year, Cam Sutton or Beanie?
Cam Sutton.
Is that the right move?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if Beanie's played really good the last couple of games. That pick in the middle of the field on Rodgers was elite. But if you look at the other two, he just kind of caught deflections and did a good job of doing that. But there's more to it than just getting interceptions. And I think with Sutton's versatility, his experience, I think that's going to come through. And eventually he'll bump Beanie out of a job. I don't know if it's going to be in Washington. I think they'll work Sutton in slowly. But eventually, yeah, he'll take over the slot.
Thank you, Ray. I have no further questions.
All right, guys. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Ray.
What a nice man he is, huh, Donnie?
The greatest man.
Have you met him in person?
Yes, I've met Ray.
Does a hell of a job over there and has become a staple on the station. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. He's everybody's go-to.
I have a different take than people on Najee. Maybe I'm crazy. I think there's a decent chance he'll be back on a deal here. You?
I actually don't think so. Unless he would have to come back here almost tail between his legs, and with the way he's playing, I don't see that happening. I would expect another team to give him some money. If Kevin Colbert was still the man in charge, and I Chris and I talked about this yesterday, not a knock at Kevin Colbert. He just did things more old school than what we are used to seeing now. I think, A, the option would have already been exercised and they would have been working on some sort of extension with him. Now that it's guys that kind of look more new age, Omar Khan, Andy Weidel, I think they'll just say, like, listen, we appreciate what you did here for the last 3 to 4 years. Like, you know, go out and get some money. Like, if nobody goes after him, then hey, then we'll call you back. But I just don't see that happening.
Coming up next, let's get back to the college games. Mr. Joe Smeltzer is going to join us to talk about Penn State. Give us a bio of Joe Smeltzer. I taught him at yes. Waynesburg, so he must be very good at what he does, Donnie, and Limits.
Joe is a friend. He writes for Nittany Sports Now. He's up there right now at Penn State getting ready for the top five matchup between the Buckeyes and the Nittany Lions.
Getting you ready for a giant weekend of college football. Pitt with one of its biggest games, really, of the 21st century. I was mapping those out this morning, Dr. Football, and then welcome to a Donnie Football Friday, and it's up there, man. You had, obviously, I mean, the Fiesta Bowl we don't talk about. That's a pretty big game to play Alex Smith and Utah in the Fiesta Bowl on national television.
Urban Meyer, too, right?
Yeah, I think.
Or did he leave?
I think he left and Kyle Whittingham may have coached that game. I think. Pitt Wake Forest for the ACC title. Pitt Miami in 2002. We forget about that one. I'm not talking about results of games. I'm talking about going into the game. Miami had like a 30-something game unbeaten streak. Pitt was unbeaten in the Big East, I believe, at the time. If they win that game with Larry Fitzgerald, they may go on to win the Big East and go to a major bowl. But Miami came in and won it. Pitt Cincy with the Big East and a BCS bowl at stake. Clemson coming here in Pickett's year. All of those. This one's in there. And Donnie, you could argue it's bigger. You could argue it's bigger because by the time I think all of those games happened, the big prize, the national championship, and I'm not saying Pitt's going to win it, please, but the big prize was off the table. It's not off the table yet. They win this. It's another step toward the playoff. This is as big a game as Pitt has played in a long, long time.
Yeah, as long as you stay undefeated, and like you mentioned, to that point in all of those games you referenced, they were not undefeated. So when it was the BCS era, it was already a lost cause. Like,
yeah.
Best case scenario, they would get a BCS bowl. They're still alive for this thing. as long as they win tomorrow.
And people, of course, will laugh and say, oh, he just mentioned Pitt in the national championship in the same sentence. Well, the whole point is you keep the dream alive if you stay unbeaten. To me, that's the whole point of that. And then all of a sudden you set up what will be five steps bigger of a game against Clemson. And then what? You know, it's there right now. And then there's Penn State, Ohio State, which nationally, of course, is the bigger game, played at noon. And that's where I want to start with our next guest, one Joe Smeltzer of Nittany Sports Now, a former student of mine. There he is. He's standing outside the stadium, Donnie. We have him on 93.7 The Fan
that?
Video.
There he is.
This is legendary. Joe, how are you?
I'm doing great, Joe. I've come a long way from Waynesburg, obviously, and this is my third full season on the Penn State beat, standing right here, as those watching the video can see, outside of Beaver Stadium. Got here a little early for some college game day availabilities, and it doesn't get much bigger than this in college football, and I'm excited. 12 o'clock tomorrow, can't come soon enough.
Clearly, Joe, taking my sports writing class at Waynesburg sparked your entire career, yes?
Yeah, I would say so. Definitely helped. So.
Donnie, you know what I did? I wanted to start you, Joe, with this. The noon start tomorrow. To me, and this might only be me, I think people are way overreacting to this. If I were still in college, I would probably start drinking right now for tomorrow's game. I love the noon start. You just wake up, you have your tailgate party at 8 in the morning, you're fired up for the game, and then you still have the night. If they win, here's the whole point. If they win, you still have an entire night of celebration ahead. I don't mind the noon start. How do people there feel about it?
Well, from a sports writer's perspective, and Joe, you probably agree with this too, I like the thought of everything wrapping up by 4 and wrapping up my stuff writing by 6 and then going home. So I like, from a work standpoint, I really like the noon kick. From a fan standpoint, to Penn State specifically, I think it definitely loses something not having that whiteout environment at 7:30 and having to really kind of torpedo the whiteout plans as we know them because of what Fox is doing with the noon kicks. The TV stations make their money. Penn State fans still get to watch what should be a heck of a show tomorrow. So I think it is overblown to an extent. But I do see why people would be a little frustrated at this type of matchup not kicking off under the lights at Beaver Stadium.
Joe, in the 3 years that you've been covering Penn State, you have covered some big ones. I mean, you've gotten to cover a Rose Bowl already under your belt. Where does this game rank for you, Penn State football-wise, in the 3 years?
As far as overall hype surrounding it, maybe number 2 behind Michigan last year. I just think, going back with all the outside stuff that didn't have much to do with Penn State, everything surrounding Michigan, the drama surrounding, is Jim Harbaugh going to coach? What's going to happen to Michigan? Is this season going to end up being null and void? Just all that outside hype, it's really hard to beat that. And then, of course, Penn State had to win that one, too, to stay alive in the Big Ten race and the college football playoff race. And this year, with the 14 playoff still in effect, I think this would have been number 1. But because of the 12-team playoff, Joe, you guys were talking about how the 12-team playoff really makes Pitt SMU a much bigger deal than it would have been before this new format. I think it kind of has the opposite effect to this Penn State-Ohio State game. I think maybe it's a must-win for Ohio State. Having 2 losses would really put it on the playoff bubble and knock it out of the Big Ten title race. But it's weird saying this, but Penn State could lose tomorrow and really be just fine. You have 4 games after this. They're going to be favored to win all 4, probably all 4 by double digits, at least 3 of them by double digits. And the 12-team playoff really kind of takes some of the luster out of this because, one team, it might be a must-win for Ohio State. It's definitely not a must-win for Penn State. And that wouldn't have been the case last year. So, to answer your question, Donnie, I would put it at number 2 because of the hype surrounding Michigan coming into last year's game. And also, Penn State had to beat Michigan last year. And it frankly, doesn't have to beat Ohio State tomorrow to win a national championship.
Joe Smeltzer of Nittany Sports Now. Wonder Twin, do you have a question for your old Waynesburg classmate?
I do. Joe, it comes down to Drew Aller in this game for me. Do you think that he's going to play? And what does Drew need to do to pull out a victory for Penn State in this game?
To answer the first part of your question, Austin, I think he's going to be good to go. I think, you're not diving and doing ball security drills if your knee is not at least close to 100%, right? And that's what Drew was doing when we saw him at practice Wednesday, and I fully expect him to play Saturday because of that. To answer the second part, that's a good question. I just think that Drew needs to do what he's been doing all season long, and that's really playing quality football. I think it's easy to forget with what ended up happening against Wisconsin with Bo Pribula coming in and really not only holding down the fort as the backup quarterback, really kind of playing lights out in that second half. It's easy to forget that in the first half before Drew went down, he was playing some of the best football he's played at Penn State. He went 14 of 18, should have been 15 of 18. Joian Fleming dropped a gimme pass in the red zone that would have probably added a second touchdown for Penn State. But I feel like Drew is definitely going to be good to go. And I think that if he plays the way he's been playing all season, he's been one of the most efficient quarterbacks in college football. I think just continuing those efforts would go a long way to Penn State getting a win Saturday.
Joe, this might be a tough one for you because I don't know how much of an argument you can make, but we know the James Franklin coaching record against great teams is not good. He does have one Big Ten title under his belt. He's beaten Ohio State just one time in his career. What argument would you make for people to say, you know what, I do think a James Franklin coach team can get the job done tomorrow?
Yeah, I think the argument, Donnie, there would be to kind of forget about 2023, 22, 21, 20, et cetera, and focus, on what advantages this Penn State team has in 2024 over the 2024 Ohio State Buckeyes. And Donnie, I know you like this. I think a big factor in this game is going to be the trenches. Ohio State's offensive line, frankly, might be a mess tomorrow. You know, you're down to your third-string left tackle, and when you have injuries on the offensive line, that really kind of creates a domino effect because, you know, tackles might have to move to guard. Guards might have to move to center. It really kind of messes up the whole ordeal when guys are hurt, and I think that you're going to see a lot of shuffling on the Ohio State offensive line tomorrow. Unfortunately for Penn State, everybody's talking about Drew Aller's injury, but denied Dennis Sutton, who is one of Penn State's best players on the other side, he suffered what looked like a groin injury in the second quarter against Wisconsin. And unlike Drew Aller, he was not seen in our practice viewing window. So, frankly, I would be surprised if Drew Aller can't go. I'd be equally surprised if denied Dennis Sutton can go on Saturday. So, but even with him out, and that's going to hurt a lot because obviously, he's a guy that could be a first-round draft pick. And also, Abdul Carter, the other defensive end, is somebody that Penn State likes to move around and likes to play in other places besides the edge. If Denai can't go, do you kind of lock Abdul Carter into that edge spot, or do you really kind of use more of a rotation at defensive end and play Smith Filbert a lot more than you would otherwise? I think that the ends that Penn State has behind Abdul and Denai Dennis Sutton, Smith Filbert, who I just mentioned, he's a fifth-year guy. Amin Vanover is a fourth-year guy. He's the guy that's really made the most of his opportunities kind of coming in the reserve role this season. I still think that Penn State's depth at defensive line is strong enough to cause Ohio State's O-line a lot of problems, especially if it's down to its third-string left tackle.
Joe, we appreciate the time, man. I'll leave you 15 seconds here on a question we're going to deal with. If Penn State loses this week but gets in as an at-large and loses in the first round, is that a satisfactory season? 15 seconds.
No, it is not. Losing a first-round playoff game, James Franklin has already proven that he can make a 12-team playoff, right? They would have made the 12-team playoff in each in, I think, six of the past eight seasons. If they lose in the first round, I don't know how much progress people are going to see that as. So losing a first-round playoff game, which would likely be here at Beaver Stadium, no, that would leave a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you, guys.
What a wonderful man he is, Donnie.
A wonderful young man.
He really is. I'm glad to see him having success in his career. I am. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. And I thought that he was really enthusiastic and completely backed my assertion that the sport, he took two sports writing classes from me at Waynesburg, really launched his career. Listen to his answer when I asked him that. Clearly, Joe, taking my sports writing class at Waynesburg sparked your entire career, yes?
Yeah, I would say so.
You got to keep that that little, yeah, I would say so, as a drop. That has now entered the pantheon. I can do that. Right up there, some would say, with our Dr. Dick interview.
Can I call you Ron, Dr. Yeah. Dick?
Some of the other ones, Donnie, we'll always remember that one, wouldn't we? Or won't we? George from Washington.
Pomp will always Pomp. Remember.
Yeah. There's no way Pomp knew that was Pony. Did he?
No, I am not convinced.
Yeah, there's zero chance. And then, of course, there's Todd, who called in your show with some advice to TJ Watt and Cam Hayward on what to do about Pickens.
Yes, and Todd was basically saying, hey, what you doing? Do you like my impression there, Joe?
We'll get that clip in a minute for you, Donnie. What do you guys think? For Penn State, what is a satisfactory season? Does one win do it then in the playoff or no?
I think they at least need to win one playoff game. Yeah, it's kind of funny because it feels like we're saying the same thing about the pro team in town. But they've been on the precipice of it so many times when it was only four teams. And now it's easier to get in, especially for them. And they're basically in. Like they, like Joe said and like we feel, they can lose tomorrow's game and probably still get into the 12-team field.
Oh, yeah.
So you do that, I think you have to win one of those playoff games, because then you get down to, you know, the nitty gritty of, hey, we do belong with the blue bloods. Like if you're just in that top 12 and you lose that first round game, you still kind of feel second tier, which is where they've been for a while.
I think two playoff games for me with Penn State, given the talent on that roster, for me, two games equals satisfactory season. After that, fine.
They have to win at least one playoff game. It has to. And because if you get a first-round bye, you're going to be playing a significantly lower seed. If they're the 5 seed, they're going to play like BYU and then maybe Oregon again. It would be a complete and utter failure if they don't win a playoff game.
How about Pitt? What's the bar for them right now? What makes it a satisfactory or unsatisfactory season?
If you're just saying satisfactory, I think they're basically there. I mean, after what last season was.
Oh, my God, the bar is that low? Well, what if they lose three more games?
They were 3-9.
So what?
Last season was a disaster.
Yeah, every season's different because of the transfer portal. One season, to me, has nothing to do with judging the next. They brought in a new quarterback.
And a new coordinator.
Yeah, well, a new quarterback, to me, more importantly, underscoring the point that last year has nothing to do with this year. I'm always surprised at how low the bar is sometimes for Pitt.
I feel like for the fan base it was low. Like coming into this season, you probably thought, hopefully we get back to bowl eligibility. We go like 6-6,
yeah,
or 7-5.
That's low. So they've already exceeded it for you. How about you, Limits?
My expectations have completely changed. Now it's make the playoffs.
Or bust. For me, it's 10 wins or bust, and they could lose this. Shoot, they could even lose to Clemson and get to 10 wins. I almost feel like that's too low. But when you start 7-0 and you have an Alabama transfer at quarterback who was playing great, who people were talking about for the Heisman a couple weeks ago, and your schedule is what it is, which is right now there's no top 10 team on the whole thing, you got to get to 10 at this point. You're 7-0. with five games left. Anything less than that, for me, is not a satisfactory Pitt season because my expectations are no longer tethered to what I thought before the year or anything like that. You start 7-0, Donnie, for me at least, they go up. It should really be what he said. It should really be the playoff. I mean, you have a coach who walked in here a long time ago talking about competing with Penn State for state supremacy, talking about national championships, talking about all that. And sometimes I think it's remarkable how low the bar sometimes gets with Pitt. Why not raise it?
And there's also an opportunity if they do keep on winning that maybe they do have a battle for state supremacy, Joe, with a lot on the line.
Would that be great?